Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 220 event, which takes place in Boston, Massachusetts. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost two units for UFC Fight Night 124 after going 0-1 on our premium bets, although we did win our one-unit free bet on Jessica Ai. Back to the present, UFC 220 features an 11-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Islam Makhachev, who is 14-1, and Gleison Tibau, who is 41-11. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Makhachev, minus 270, the comeback on Tibau at plus 190. Right now, looking over Five Dimes, our sponsored sportsbook, it is Makhachev minus 240, the comeback on Tibau is at plus 200. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming into this fight overall. It's a good fight. I mean, back in his day, in his prime, Tibau would be more than game, I think, and more than ready to pull off this upset over Makhachev. But the problem with Tibau is obviously he's had some time off. I mean, he's been out since his controversial submission win over Trujillo, and USADA got him basically since then. So, I mean, you know, well, not a surprise to, I think, a lot of us, because we've seen, you know, Tibau's physique through the years and his strength, and, you know, so not surprised. But if he's cleaned up his act and he comes back with the layoff and he's 34 years old now, and again, that's not really that old, but at the same time, in fight years and all the wars and everything and all the high level competition that Tibau has been in, he's way beyond that in fight years. So he's not a normal 34-year-old. So there's a lot of question marks to be said about Tibau coming back into this fight. And he's facing a prospect, age 26 in Makhachev, that's only going to get better. And, you know, they have a similar style. You know, I mean, both these guys are known for their ground game, their grappling, their wrestling, even though Tibau has definitely improved his striking along the way through the years. I mean, his striking was always a threat, especially, you know, up to now. I mean, his boxing, his power is a little bit underrated. His striking game's definitely developed pretty well. Makhachev's coming around a little been in that department as well. He's improving his stand-up game, but both these guys are grinders. Tibau has excellent takedown defense. He's always has. So it's not going to be easy for Makhachev to come in here and grind out Tibau like he normally does. So he is going to have to lean on his stand-up game in this fight, and it's going to be interesting because, like I said, a game prime Tibau would actually win this fight, I think, on the feet. But right now, I do favor Makhachev in this spot. I think he could do a little bit more damage and possibly hurt Tibau. I mean, Tibau hasn't really been performing the greatest even before his bust as of late either. So I think this is a prime time for Makhachev to come in here and pick up a solid quality win, and he could possibly do it by stoppage. But even if he doesn't get the stoppage along the way, I think he still does enough to win two out of three rounds, even if it's competitive. So just I question Tibau more than anything else. And again, the matchup, we all know what it's for as far as UFC is concerned. I mean, there's no doubt that they want Makhachev to get a very high quality win in a guy like Tibau and move up that ladder, because I don't think there's – marketing-wise, there's no reason that they would like Tibau to come ahead and you know, get back in on the winning track and kind of push him towards a title shot. So I think it's complete opposite. It's definitely a lot better if Makhachev wins this fight for the UFC, and they matched it accordingly. I mean, it's a good time for him to have this fight. So the pick is Makhachev. I think it makes sense. But I hope at least Tibau is game and he shows up in his competitiveness fight. I think he might. But the pick has to be Makhachev in this spot.
And I completely understand the Makhachev pick. I mean, Makhachev literally just faced two very competent wrestlers in Nick Lentz and Chris Wade, and he out-grappled them and dominated them for the most part to win very one-sided decisions. And now he's facing another guy in Gleison Tibau, who is a very strong wrestler and grappler. So it'll be extremely interesting to see if Makhachev can utilize that same game plan, because – you know, Gleison Tibau, he has some of the best takedown defense in the history of the UFC. You got to remember, this is the one guy that Khabib Nurmagomedov couldn't take down. Now, granted, this was way earlier in Magomedov's UFC career. It was one of his first fights in the UFC. And he basically just spent the whole fight trying to take Tebow down along the fence, and he just couldn't do it. Ended up winning a close decision that could have gone either way. Now, here, Makhachev, I would say he might want to showcase his striking a little bit more if the wrestling isn't working or the ground game isn't working, but Tebow is a competent striker. He's not an amazing striker, but he has decent enough technical boxing. He doesn't have the best chin, and the biggest concern with Tebow, obviously, is that he hasn't fought since November of 2015, I think. I mean, it's been a while, and he basically missed, all of 2016, all of 2017, and then a couple months on top of that. So it's been more than 2 years since he's competed. So he's going to be older. He's off whatever he tests positive for with USADA. And, chins don't just magically get better with time. They usually get worse. So that's another thing. Now, Makhachev isn't exactly a knockout threat, but that is something to consider. So, I'm leaning Makhachev mainly just because he's younger. He's the better prospect at this point, but Tebow could play spoiler. If Makhachev can't take him down and he's forced to exchange, Tebow might get the better of him on the feet. I mean, Makhachev kind of got humiliated by Adriano Martins when he was forced to stand and trade. He wasn't even forced. He was just screwing around on the feet, throwing a bunch of spinning stuff, and he got blasted. So it's possible that Makhachev could lose this fight, especially if he can't get his game plan going. But I'm going to lean his way anyway just because I think he has a lot more room for growth, and he might have improved some parts of his game significantly since the last time we've seen him. So my pick is Makhachev. Now, closing off the Fight Pass prelims is a featherweight contest between Matt Bissett, who is 22-7, and Enrique Barzola, who is 14-3-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put up Barzola minus 215, the comeback on Bissett at plus 165. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it's Barzola minus 235. The comeback on Bissett is plus 195. So line margins have tightened up a little bit again. There's two-way action coming in this fight with a little bit of rise recently in Barzola as far as price goes. I understand it. I put it 2-1, I mean, for that reason. Bissett, I have a ton of respect for. He's one of these guys that's been around the sport for a long time. Of course, he's a Bellator vet. He's an Access TV vet as well. The guy has all sorts of skill, all sorts of heart, all sorts of toughness. I mean, he deserves his shot in the UFC. He's been putting in the work, and he's good, man. I tell you what, he's going to win a lot of fights, I think, in the featherweight division, or, at least have his spots to be able to win a few fights. I mean, the featherweight division is stacked, so I shouldn't say he's going to have an easy run or anything like that, but this fight's going to be difficult for him. I mean, it's not going to be a easy short-notice step-in fight for Bissett here. Barzola's only getting better. I mean, he's the type of guy that he hasn't been around the sport for a long time. I mean, he's getting, I think he's getting a lot of real-time experience now with his in the UFC. You know, he obviously before the UFC, he's had a decent little background, but I mean, since his time on the Ultimate Fighter for Barzola and now his UFC stint here, his fight game is getting better fight by fight. You can tell the improvements he's making. Of course, he's training with American Top Team now as well. So there's all sorts of things to like about Barzola's game, and I expect it to even look better this fight. So that's why it's a difficult matchup for Bissett. I actually think Bissett is probably the more well-versed mixed martial artist overall. I mean, because the guy has a pretty good stand-up game. I think the guy has decent wrestling, probably underrated wrestling, actually. And he's got great jiu-jitsu. So he is the complete package, and he's capable of finishing you on the feet with his strikes. He's capable of finishing you by submission on the ground as well, or he can grind you out and win on the scorecards. I mean, so Bissett is a tough out. But the problem is, I mean, I think it's fresh in people's minds too. The Holoball loss that he just had on Dana White's Contender Series. I mean, he got blown out. I was surprised, honestly, that I wasn't surprised that Holoball beat him, but I was surprised to the extent that Holoball beat him, honestly. So that's not a good look, especially as, Bissett's been another one of these guys that's been around the sport, like I said, for a while. He's 33 years old. So in fight years, he is beyond that a little bit as well. So, that chin's not going to get any better. And Barzola, even though he's not really known for his striking, it is getting better, and he does have a little bit of power. So that's a concern for me a little bit because Bissett is hittable, and, he has been – absorbing that punishment and getting rocked from time to time in his fights recently as well. So that's something to definitely keep an eye on. The other thing in this fight, stylistically, that I think is kind of a bad matchup for Bissett is also Barzola getting the fight to the ground. I mean, we all know Barzola is a really good grinder. He's capable of out-wrestling a lot of his opponents. And I think his submission defense is good enough to avoid what Bissett's going to throw up off his back. So I just think stylistically it is a tough matchup for him. And, you know, and again, it's a shame because I know Bissett can win some fights in the featherweight division. I just think this is a tough one for him to come in and on short notice. I mean, coming off of an injury, the time off, you know, his performance last time on the show, I know he's going to be motivated. And, I mean, mentally, he's definitely going to be game. He's a professional. He's, like I said, there's a lot to like about him. But I just, unfortunately for him, I think this fight is a tough one, and I'm going to pick Barzola to win. So that's the way I'm going to pick it.
Yeah, you can't think about Matt Bissett without watching that debut. There aren't a lot of guys that get an opportunity in the UFC after losing in the first round on their tryout, but that's what happened with Bissett. He got absolutely blasted by Curt Hollabaugh. That fight was not even very competitive, which was shocking to me because he was on a really nice win streak. He had defended the CES title for multiple times. I mean, he looked like a solid prospect, and then he went into that show and his defense just wasn't there. I mean, yeah, he's got power. He looks for the knockout and he's dangerous on the feet, but defensively he is just gaping holes and he's very hittable. Now, good for him is that Enrique Barzola doesn't have the most knockout power. Don't sleep on Enrique Barzola. His striking has come a very long way since he appeared on The Ultimate Fighter Latin America 2 and won that when he was focused a little bit more on his wrestling back then. But that's what makes Barzola dangerous is he has good instincts on the feet, and then he can, if anything happens, he can always fall back on a very strong wrestling and ground game. So Enrique Barzola is a solid prospect in the UFC featherweight division. And honestly, he should be on about a 4-fight winning streak if he hadn't been completely hosed in a decision earlier. So, I think while Bissett is dangerous and has some power, the fact that he's so hittable, it's going to leave openings for Barzola that I think he can take advantage of. And if all else fails, Barzola should be able to get top position on the ground as well. So I got to lean Barzola here. I just think he's the better overall fighter. He can mix it up more. And Bissett just doesn't have the defense to hang with solid veterans in the UFC. And I think Barzola is a solid featherweight veteran at this point. Now, sticking with the featherweight division, we have Dan Ige, who is 8-1, taking on Julio Arce, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Arce -150, the comeback, and Ige +110. Looking over five times right now, it's Arce -150, the comeback, and Ige is +130. So another spot where line margins have tightened up, and there's two-way action coming into this fight. It's a tough one. I mean, you have Dana White Contender Series vets here again going at it, but these two did shine on the show. I mean, they looked great, picked up very impressive wins, and I'm glad that they're getting their spot here on this on this card. Ige was supposed to fight originally Charles Rosa. Rosa backed out with an injury, so it opened the door for Arce to step in here on short notice and fight a very game Ige. So this is going to be a great fight. I mean, I'm split on this fight. I've been going back and forth a little bit because I like what I see in Arce's game. He's getting better. I think he has an advantage standing up in this fight. Obviously, his boxing skill is impressive. I mean, there's not much more to say. He's getting better. He's developing his ground game. He's got decent takedown defense. He's got a pretty complete skill set. I mean, it's highlighted by his boxing, though, in the striking. There's no doubt about that. And he's got that killer instinct, which I like as well. So there's a lot of good things to like about Arce in this spot. You can say a lot of the same things about Ige, though, as well. I mean, a lot of people were kind of sleeping on his striking in his Dana White Contender Series performance, but he showed that he's more than a grappling-based fighter, which he's a little bit more well-known for. You know, his grinding style, his grappling ability as well, that's what kind of fighter Ige is. That's what he showcases the most, but he has developed a striking game to the point where it can be very effective, like I said, as evident on the show. So Ige is no slouch on the feet. Now, I don't know if he's going to want to get in a true firefight with Arce. I think that's where Arce has his biggest advantages. And why I'm finding this fight difficult is I know Ige is going to be pushing the pace, trying to get some takedowns and, you know, and steal some rounds that way as well, because this thing will be competitive. And of course, Ige had a little bit more time for this fight. So, I mean, he's a little bit more well prepared, I would say. I mean, it's fair to say that. So this is a tough one because both these guys, I think it could go either way. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Arce's way. I think if he can brawl, keep this fight upright a little bit, I think he's going to have a little bit more success on the feet. And I think he is capable of doing so. So again, another spot where I'm going to see how these guys look at the weigh-ins and I could flip back. So make sure you guys stay tuned to MMAoddsbreaker.com for our staff picks as always. Those are our final selections for this card. But right now I am leaning a little bit more towards Arce. I just think he's going to probably outstrike and outpoint Ige to a decision win. So that's my call.
This is a tough fight to call. Ige and Arce are very evenly matched in my opinion. Both guys looked extremely solid on their Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series performances, winning pretty one-sided stoppage victories. Although Arce, I would say, is the more competent striker of the two, but Ige is a little bit more well-rounded with a bigger focus on the ground game. That being said, in Ige's fight, he was able to hurt his opponent on the feet, even drop him at one point, before eventually just wearing them down and getting a third-round submission. Arce, on the other hand, he was a little bit more methodical, kind of figuring out his opponent. And then once he got the timing down, I mean, he just unloaded with combinations until the ref stopped the fight. So both guys are very competent fighters. Arce trains out of Tiger Showman's, which is a very good gym and has developed some excellent fighters in the UFC, including another one we'll be seeing later on this card. So that's a great environment for him. But Ige, I really think that he presents some tools that could give Arce a tough time. You got to remember also, Arce is stepping in on short notice for Charles Rosa. He's only had less than a month to prepare for this. Granted, that's not like a week or anything, but so it's a little bit of time, but that is something to consider. Ige, I think if he can get takedowns and focus on his ground game and stand long enough to set up takedowns, then Ige should be able to pull this out. But if it stays standing, I think Arce will probably win all the way. So it just really boils down to who can dictate their own effective strategy. But when you have a fighter that's a little bit more well-rounded, I kind of usually lean their way. And I think Dan Ige is going to be able to get the takedowns, and I think he'll be able to get the win. So my pick is Ige. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Dustin Ortiz, who is 17-7, taking on Alexander Pantoja, who is 18-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Pantoja minus 150, the comeback, and Ortiz at plus 110. Right now, looking for five dimes, is Pantoja minus 140, the comeback on Ortiz is at plus 120. So again, another spot where two-way action's coming in. Early on, though, there was a little bit more action on Pantoja. Now we're getting a little bit sharper action coming back in on Ortiz as well, and the line's starting to drop. So there is two-way action in this fight, and it'll continue to be. I mean, Pantoja is one of those guys that, of course, I think, you know, the MMA betting community, a lot of, you know, maybe the newer fans of sport, this guy is one of those guys that was the number one seed on the Ultimate Fighter, you know, tournament to see who gets a shot at Demetrius Johnson, which ultimately Tim Elliott ended up winning. But I mean, this guy, that's how highly touted he was. A lot of people thought that this guy would be a legit contender, and you know, he has a skill set. I mean, he probably will eventually get a title shot in this weight class as well, if he keeps his, you know, his improvements going on and his role going here, and that counts. In this spot here against Ortiz, it's a very difficult fight, but it goes a long way. If you could beat Ortiz, that gets you one step closer to, you know, potential title shot. If a couple more wins, he probably gets it. So Pantoja has some skill everywhere. I mean, he's well-rounded. He's dangerous. He's a finisher. He can knock you out on the feet. Again, he's another guy that's capable of subbing you on the ground as well. He's got some underrated wrestling, but he does have some flaws. And, you know, at times he puts his foot on the gas so much, he's so aggressive at times that he leaves himself open for, you know, susceptible to getting taken down. He can get out grappled in some spots as well. His His strike defense at times isn't the greatest. I mean, he's hittable. So there's some flaws to his game that he's definitely got to tighten up, especially defensively. But offensively, man, the guy's definitely a threat. Ortiz, on the other hand, he's been a little bit more consistent. He's been a little bit more solid. We know what we're getting from him. I mean, he's faced, some great competition along the way so far in the UFC. He's a true UFC vet. And he's won a lot of great fights. So, I mean, he has that experience. He's coming off a great knockout win over Sandoval, which a lot of people, I think, were surprised, you know, by that, how quickly everything kind of went in that spot. So it was a big win for Ortiz. But unfortunately for him, right before that, I mean, he suffered the first submission loss of his career, to the hands of Moreno, which I honestly, we have to mention that Pitoya has a win over Moreno. But again, you got to throw MMA math out the window because they match up differently. And I think that this fight is going to be competitive and it is going to be a different type of fight here because I think Ortiz is going to have some success in the grappling department here. I think he probably does end up in top position along the way as the fight progresses. I think Ortiz is actually going to have some success on the feet as well. Especially if he lets loose, if he doesn't hold back and he lets his aggression go and he counters well, I think Ortiz can do some damage against Pitoya on the feet. So I think this is going to be close. It'll be a back and forth, war. I'm expecting it to be like a split decision type of fight if it hits the scorecards. So it's definitely a dog or pass situation in my opinion, at this point. And, you know, still, like I said, I opened it +110. There's +120s out there. It was higher before. I think it is a split decision. So you always have to lean a little bit more towards the dog there. So I'm going to actually pick Ortiz to win this fight as well. Now I know again, stylistically and matchup wise for the UFC, that's probably not what they're expecting. I mean, this would be a lot better off if Pitoya comes in here and beats Ortiz and kind of keeps on moving up the ladder because I think an Ortiz win here isn't really going to go as far for him as it would for Pitoya. So I just don't think the UFC is going to get their wish here. I think Ortiz is going to be more than game and he's going to be able to probably come out with a close fought, you know, decision win here. So the pick is Ortiz and what I expect to be a split decision type of fight.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Clearly there are paths to victory for Dustin Ortiz. If he can let his hands go, he has some good power and he does have some competent boxing ability. He might be able to put some pressure on Pitoya. And then clearly he is a physical wrestler. He has some physical wrestling. If he can get top position, Pitoya might be too content to sit on his back and work his guard. So that could help Ortiz grind out the fight potentially from top position. He might be able to just land some ground and pound on from top position. So those are the paths to victory for Dustin Ortiz. But Pitoya is clearly the more well-rounded fighter of the two. I mean, Pitoya has a more dynamic striking game. I think he's more aggressive. He lands way more strikes per minute. So that's something Ortiz is going to have to keep up with Pitoya in terms of volume. Pitoya mixes things up better, throws more kicks. He has a more diverse attack. So that's something Ortiz is going to have to be thinking about. And then on the ground, while Ortiz does have the better wrestling, Pitoya definitely has the better overall grappling. Pitoya has, I would say, elite ground skills. Not quite the best in the division, but I mean, he's definitely, you know, knocking on the door. I mean, if it goes to the ground, yeah, Ortiz probably can secure top position during scrambles, but I mean, Pitoya is going to make him work. He's going to be throwing up submissions at him and he might be able to get some sweeps and he might be able to, take Ortiz's back or sink something in because, you know, Ortiz did get submitted by Moreno. Granted, that was after Moreno hurt him on the feet, but, and Pitoya submitted Moreno, and I know it's MMA math, but I think Pantoja's ground game is good enough that he might be able to pull something off against Ortiz as well. So while I do see a path to victory for Ortiz, I just think Pitoya is the better fighter at this point, and he's currently on the rise. Ortiz did pull off an impressive victory in his last fight with such a quick stoppage, but I don't think Pitoya is nearly as chinny as Sandoval. I think he'll be able to go the distance if need be. And I just think he's going to be able to outwork Ortiz at worst over the course of three rounds, if not find a finish. So my pick is going to be Pitoya. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have a rematch of Sabah Hamasi, who is 11-7, and Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Al-Hassan -315, the comeback on Hamasi at +235. And to my surprise, a little bit. I mean, everybody came in Hamasi's way a little bit as the dog price dropped. Right now it's -220 for Al-Hassan and the comeback on Hamasi +180. And I'm saying that because I figured a lot of people would say, oh, you know, I mean, the writing's on the wall. Al-Hassan kind of knocked him out. It was controversial, but still, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think a lot of people did do their homework and watch the fight and realize Hamasi was actually doing better than most people thought they would in that fight. Because again, it was, the action was on Al-Hassan the first time as well. Not a lot of respect coming in towards Hamasi until now. So I'm glad to see it. I mean, Hamasi is a very underrated, dangerous fighter in his own right. I mean, the guy definitely, on the feet, he could catch you, he could clip you, he could put you out. So Al-Hassan has to be careful in this spot. Obviously Hamasi trains at a good camp as well. So, I mean, there's a lot to like about him, and especially at a dog price. So it was definitely a dog or pass situation. And so those of you guys that got a good plus number out there, congrats. I think you probably made the right move. But without all being said, I still do trust Al-Hassan's chin a little bit better. Hamasi does get rocked often. He's got 4 knockout losses. Al-Hassan is a beast on the feet. I mean, he does have a lot of power, especially early on in a fight. And I think he's going to find his spots, and he's probably going to end up doing some damage along the way here as well. And early enough that he probably wins this fight inside. If not, he might be able to steal 2 out of 3 rounds. But as it goes, it definitely gets a little bit sketchier. And I think the fight will get closer and closer, and Hamasi could start taking over. So it's interesting to see how it's going to play out this time around. But I think these guys are, again, going to respect each other because they've already been there and felt each other's power. But I still think Al-Hassan is going to be the more dangerous, and I trust his chin a little bit more. So it's hard not to pick him for me in this spot. So the pick is Al-Hassan, and probably by knockout. But hopefully it's a rightful stoppage this time and no controversies.
The one thing that really struck me during the Hamasi Al-Hassan fight the first time was Hamasi was more technical, but Al-Hassan was much more aggressive. So watching them fight, Al-Hassan was just winging crazy shots. I mean, he's an extremely athletic guy and very quick. And the problem though was, I mean, he was just throwing everything he had into those strikes, and he wasn't hitting hardly any of them. So, the longer this fight was going to go, Al-Hassan was going to completely gas out, and Hamasi was probably going to take over. So if this is basically a complete remake of the last fight and it goes just as crazy as the last one, I see Al-Hassan just blowing all of his energy in the first round, getting tired, and Hamasi just takes over until he either wins a decision with rounds 2 and 3 or potentially gets a stoppage as Al-Hassan fades. Hamasi is the more technical striker, so if Al-Hassan leaves openings, Hamasi can take advantage of him. That being said, Al-Hassan has tremendous power, and if he does connect with some of the crazy shots that he likes to throw, he can put Hamasi's lights out at any moment. So that does make me very nervous, but I'm actually going to side with Hamasi here. I think Al-Hassan does run himself out of energy being too overeager trying to put Hamasi's lights out. And when that doesn't work, I don't think he really has a fallback plan. So my pick is going to be Saba Hamasi, although I'm extremely nervous and I will be crossing my fingers watching this fight. Now this brings us to the main event of the preliminary card on Fox Sports 1. We have a featherweight contest between Kyle Bochniak, who is 7-2, and Brandon Davis, who is 8-2. Now Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Davis, -185, the comeback on Bochniak at +145. And right now, looking over 5 dimes, it is actually Davis -120. The comeback on Bochniak is even money. So line has dropped quite a bit. I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I wasn't expecting Bochniak to get that much respect. He's a good fighter. I respect him. I think he's very solid, and he's only going to get better, you know, fight by fight. Unfortunately for him, in his last fight, I mean, he got out grappled pretty bad. I mean, that was to the likes of Jeremy Kennedy, though, and that's Jeremy Kennedy's game plan. But on the feet, Bochniak was having some success in that fight. But before that, of course, I mean, he had that controversial win over Barzola that we were just talking about earlier, and that was a controversial win for sure. A lot of people, most people, I think, scored it for Barzola in that spot. But Bochniak made it close, and, you know, he was definitely competitive in that fight. And I think, again, he's got that definitely that toughness about him. I mean, he's got the heart that he keeps on going. And I like – what I was impressed with going back through to watching Bochniak's footage is really his coaching staff is great. I mean, those guys give really solid advice in the corner. He seems to follow it. He goes out there. They have a really good relationship. A lot of fighters will. I mean, it kind of goes in one ear out the other, you know, what their coaches tell them. But there are those, you know, a few that do listen and are able to actually perform in the cage what their coaches want them to do and stick to a game plan or whatnot. Bochnek is one of those guys. So they got a good thing going there, and I think they game plan well. So that's probably the underrated factor, I think, in this spot right here as well. I think he's going to be well prepared, and he's going to probably look to take Davis down and maybe out-grind him and out-wrestle him in this spot as well. Now, on the feet, I think he could be competitive, but Davis is impressive, man. I'll tell you what, he's an aggressive striker with some wrestling and ground skill to go along with it, but he's the type of guy that on the feet, he pushes a very high pace. He stalks you, goes forward, looks to drop bombs. He throws nice combinations. And again, I should mention he was a Dana White Contender Series winner. It was a really great fight. He beat a solid competitor in Arnett. And, it was a solid win for him. Like I said, it was a fun fight to watch. So that's what kind of competitor Davis is. I think he's only getting better fight by fight as well. I mean, if you look back some of his older footage, he's definitely improved since then. So this is going to be a firefight. It's going to be a good fight to watch, a fight of the night candidate for sure. I think what's going to happen here is Davis is going to be able to stuff some takedowns, and he's going to be the aggressor on the feet, and he's going to land a little bit more damage. So I do think Davis does have a slight lead. So I don't necessarily agree with all the action that came in on the dog here. I'm expecting a close competitive fight because, again, Bochnek has no quit in him. And as the fight progresses, if he can steal some takedowns, it will get interesting. But I think overall, it's Davis's striking ability that's going to win him this fight. So that's why I'm going to lean his way. So the pick is Davis to win in what should be a pretty good fight.
I'm a big fan of Brandon Davis after watching him on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. He had one of the more exciting fights of that season. Now, he didn't get a finish, but from watching him fight, I mean, he would have finished a lot of people, but his opponent was just almost too tough for his own good. Davis is the type of guy that just puts up ridiculous volume when he fights. I mean, you hear about guys that are one-and-done type fighters. They just throw one strike and reset and throw another big strike and reset. That is the complete opposite of Brandon Davis. I mean, he throws seven strikes and then resets. And he doesn't just throw seven punches. I mean, it is punch followed by it's basically like jab, uppercut, elbow, knee, head kick. I mean, in combination. I mean, this guy practices crazy combinations, and then he pulls them off in fights. And, I mean, he's really fun to watch. So this is a guy that I'm very excited about. And the UFC's matched him up against somebody that probably is going to stand and trade with him. So Bochnek is not nearly as active as Davis, but he does have power and he does have a lot of heart. So if Bochnek can connect with something really nasty, he could put himself in a good position here. But, I mean, honestly, I just don't think Bochnek's that great. I mean, he should be 0-3 in the UFC. He got a gift decision against Barzola. Literally, if you look up the MMADecisions.com website, Bochnek did not get one media score for him in that fight against Barzola, and somehow he won a split decision. So that's MMA judging for you, though. That would not happen against Brandon Davis. I mean, if they stay standing and nobody's like getting really hurt in the fight, I mean, Davis's pace is just overwhelming. So I just don't think Bochnek's going to be able to keep up. And honestly, the only way I see Bochnek winning this fight is if he does decide to mix things up and try to take this fight to the floor. He has some decent wrestling ability. I mean, he's not amazing. That's not his specialty. I mean, he is primarily a stand-up guy, but that might have to be his fallback plan here, because I just see Brandon Davis being extremely dangerous and active, and I just can't see Bochnek doing enough to sway judges with the way that Davis is going to be throwing heat at him for three straight rounds. So my pick is going to be Brandon Davis. I think this is a guy to really keep an eye on. He is very fun to watch, and I hope you guys enjoy watching him perform on Saturday. So Davis is my pick. Now moving on to the pay-per-view main card, we have a bantamweight contest between Thomas Almeida, who is 22-2, and Rob Font, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Almeida -175, the comeback on Font at +135. This is a spot where the public action did come in early on Font. Now it's down to Almeida -115, the comeback on Font -105. I am a little surprised. I mean, I do respect Font. I know the bettors out there do as well. But Almeida is the hype train that a lot of people have always respected. And I'm not disrespecting him by saying hype train, because the guy is legitimately good too. So it's not just all hype with Almeida. I mean, the guy is a heck of a competitor at bantamweight. And if he had, I think, better defense and I think a more solid chin, even though he's got the heart of a warrior, talk about that. I mean, he doesn't give up. So he's not going to quit on you. But I mean, he is flawed defensively and he gets tagged and, you know, he's been dropped. He's been rocked. So that's not what you'd like to see, you know, with Almeida, especially with the skill that he has offensively. So that's what worries me. And that's what it is. Definitely a concern. I mean, but there's a lot to like about him. I mean, again, his stand-up game is fun to watch. He's aggressive. He's precise. I mean, he's got, you know, crazy. I mean, doesn't seem like he's going to have that big power, and he does. I mean, he just has that awesome knockout power. And again, talk about killer instinct. I mean, he's got it. He's got good takedown defense as well. So, and he's only 26 years old. The kid's going to get better and better. And I mean, he's faced high level competition already. So, you know, sky's the limit for him, really. And I think this is, if he can win against Font, then this is another stepping stone towards, you know, possibly rebounding and getting on track for another, you know, title run here for Almeida. Cause I know he's the type of guy that the UFC would definitely like to push in that direction if he gets his defensive issues straightened out. So Font, on the other hand, man, there's a lot to like about him too. He's a well-rounded fighter, underrated game. And I think in his wrestling, I think he's got an underrated sub game to go along with it, but he knocks people out. That's generally what he does. And that's what people respect him and know him for. Now, my concern with Font is that, I mean, if you look back, especially at the Lineker fight, I understand the Font is, you know, I mean, recently he suffered a defeat. He lost to Munoz, in that fight by choke. That was a beautiful choke, by the way, for Munoz. But I mean, the concern for me is actually a few fights before that when he fought Lineker and he was just not his usual self. I mean, he kind of, I don't know. It looked like he was fighting scared. I mean, he wasn't, you know, letting his hands go. He was backing up. He just let Lineker dictate that complete pace of that fight. So I wasn't expecting that from Font. And against aggressive strikers, he tends to do that at times. And maybe Almeida is the type of fighter that's going to do it to him as well. So that is my concern a little bit with Font, is will he kind of backpedal and kind of get a little timid? Because he, man, when he lets his hands go, he could do some damage. So I think here, Almeida is going to kind of make him, force him into a firefight. And if that's the case, I trust Font's chin a lot better. And I think he does have dynamite in his hands as well. So that's not a good formula for Almeida. If you have a somewhat of a suspect chin, and again, with only one true knockout loss on his resume, for Almeida, maybe that's not really fair to say it, but you guys know what I'm talking about. I mean, the guy definitely has tall man defense. He's hittable. You know, and a lot of punches, he absorbs a lot of punishment. I mean, he's, like I said, tough enough to survive a lot of times, but with Font, I mean, he's got that kind of special knockout power at times where you don't get too many second chances with a guy like that. So I think along the way, even if Font's getting beat up a little bit, I mean, I think he's going to drop that big punch and it's going to drop Almeida and he's going to, you know, pounce and finish. So that's kind of the way I see this fight playing out, is Font inside the distance by knockout, obviously. So I'm going to stick to my guns and go that way. I know that, you know, a lot of times I don't necessarily agree with the way the public action has come in, but in this situation, I think it's kind of more right. And I was expecting him maybe to go the other way. So, I'll lean Font a little bit. It will be a good fight. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Almeida has some success and even maybe pulls this thing out. But I do think, you know, like I said, I trust Font. I think it's going to be a competitive fight, despite, even if he doesn't get the knockout, and I think he can win. So the pick is Font to win.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Rob Font is a very dangerous fighter with good power in the bantamweight division. My problem with him is when he faces somebody that has competent striking and power, he doesn't fight the same. You go back and watch the John Lineker fight. He tasted some of Lineker's power, and then he just got extremely passive and tentative in that fight and just basically easily lost all three rounds. Then against Pedro Munoz, a guy with competent striking, I mean, not elite striking, but a guy that is an exciting fighter with a well-rounded guy, Munoz was getting the better of Font on the feet, and Font dove into a takedown against a guy with an absolutely incredible jiu-jitsu game and got quickly submitted. So that concerns me, because now Font is facing a guy that probably has better striking than either of those two. Now, obviously, Thomas Almeida has flaws. The chin is number one. I mean, the guy has been hurt repeatedly. He got knocked out brutally by Cody Garbrandt, and then he recently got outworked by Jimmy Rivera. So that is a cause for concern. But as long as Almeida doesn't eat that big shot, I think that he can put Rob Font in a position where Font isn't as dangerous as he is capable of being. Because when Font, you know, starts to lose on the feet, he panics a little bit. Against Lineker, he panicked by just being extremely tentative and backing away from him and not engaging for three rounds. And against Munoz, he panicked by shooting in for a takedown against a guy with one of the best guillotine chokes in the entire division and just left his neck out there. So I think he can panic here, and Almeida can take advantage of that. So Thomas Almeida is an exciting, dangerous striker. Yeah, he's maybe not the best fighter in the division, but I mean, he is still capable of doing some pretty crazy things in fights. And I'm just not sure that Rob Font's going to be able to keep up with him on the feet. I mean, Rob does have the one punch knockout power, and if it connects, Almeida will be in trouble. But if Almeida connects first, I just think that ability of Font to put Almeida away goes out the window. So I'm going to side with Thomas Almeida here. I think he just outworks Font potentially over the course of three rounds because Font will just not be as willing to engage once he starts to taste Almeida's striking. So my pick's going to be Thomas Almeida. Now moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division, we have John Volante, who is 15-8, taking on Francimar Barroso, who is 19-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Volante, -215, the comeback on Barroso, +165. And right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Volante -170. The comeback on Barroso is at +150. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is a little bit more actually coming in the dog's way. Man, Volante, I'll tell you what, it's so tough, difficult setting lines on this guy from time to time because he's got all the talent in the world, all the potential in the world. Where he did, it's just he's such a letdown. I mean, you know, he's got good takedown defense. He's got power on the feet, trains at a good camp. His cardio is garbage. You know, I mean, hate to say it, but it's true a lot of times. I mean, he gasses out in fights, and then his defense is pretty bad as well, and he's hittable. And even though he does have a pretty tough chin, I mean, the guy's been knocked out four times, and I'm saying that because, typically he can take some punishment. But, I mean, it's just – he's a front runner, and if he doesn't get the job done early on, then a lot of times, he'll fade as a fight goes on, and that's what's going to open some opportunities up for Barroso in this spot here as well. I think that there's a good chance that, as the fight progresses, Volante can blow this thing again if you don't get Barroso out of there early. Barroso's pretty tough. I mean, again, he's been knocked out a few times as well, but he's facing pretty decent competition, and, if he's game enough to survive early, who knows how this fight's going to play out. So I understand it's a dog or pass situation, but I still think Volante is better. I think that Volante is more dangerous. I think Volante can do some damage early on and probably get Barroso out of there. So it's hard not to pick him, but man, if you're putting your money on this fight, just stay away from it. It's definitely a dog or pass situation because you cannot trust Volante even against, a guy like Barroso that a lot of people might not give enough credit to as being a solid fighter. You can't lay that chalk. So I understand it. I mean, even at under 2-1 right now, even if he goes out there and wins in the first 2 minutes, just stay away from it. I mean, Volante is just too sketchy right now to really depend on him with all that much. So pick your spots and you'll probably do good. And this is probably one spot you want to avoid. So the pick is Volante. I do think he should win this fight. Will he? Who knows? I mean, that's just the bottom line. So we'll see how it plays out.
While I don't trust Volante, I do think that this is a very winnable fight for him. I mean, he is a guy in heading into this Barroso fight that has the physical advantages. He's taller, longer, stronger, has more punching power, and should be the better wrestler. So he pretty much has almost everything going for him. The things that he doesn't have going for him, I think chin-wise, he might have the worst chin of the two, and then clearly conditioning has been a problem in the past for him. If Volante had a chin and conditioning, he'd be a pretty dangerous guy in the division. But, the good thing is Barroso is not the most dangerous light heavyweight. This is a guy that can grind out decisions against the lower tier guys in the division. And I don't think Volante is the low tier. I mean, he's a fringe top 15. Barroso is probably one of the lower guys in, the light heavyweight division. So as long as Volante doesn't gas and he doesn't get clipped, then I think he's going to be in a good spot here. I think he can grind this out along the fence. I think he can get takedowns. I think he can land on the feet. He has some pretty underrated leg kick ability, and he has power on the feet. You just got to be careful because, I mean, even in one of his more recent fights, I mean, he was just hammering his opponent on the feet, but he left himself exposed against Safarov and then got knocked out. You know, he was doing okay against Shogun, and then he got knocked out. You know, Patrick Cummins, close fight, but ended up losing a decision because he slowed down. So that's my big cause for concern, is if he slows down. But I mean, this is a winnable fight for Volante, and he should win it, because Barroso is just not the type of guy that should be picking up wins on the pay-per-view main card. So my pick is going to be John Volante, and I'm expecting that he wins a relatively one-sided fight, but you just never know with him, because he can be pretty inconsistent. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have a battle of prospects in Calvin Kattar, who is 17-2, and Shane Burgos, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Burgos, -265, the comeback in Kattar at +185. The early action was all one way in Kattar. The line dropped all the way down to 130-ish or so, -130-ish. Right now, it's climbed back up for Burgos. It's currently Burgos -185. The comeback in Kattar is +160. So I think it's a little bit more realistic where it is now than what I opened it, and where it went down to. I mean, I honestly thought with Burgos getting so much respect, I mean, he's kind of the guy to watch out for at 145 pounds. He's been nothing but impressive. He's got really good takedown defense with knockout power, with some ability, you know, to wrestle if he needs to as well. He is a guy that can definitely make a title run. I think at 145 pounds, and we all know how deep that division is. I mean, if everything aligns right for him, he could definitely do that. I mean, he's got that kind of special ability, and I like his speed. I like his conditioning. His defense worries me a little bit at times. I mean, the good thing is he's got decent head movement, but, you know, he likes to kind of keep his hands low. And, you know, he's got to watch out how low his hands are against Kattar, because Kattar is definitely a solid striker. I mean, he proved that in his debut upset win over Feely. A lot of people weren't giving Kattar credit, that fight, or a shot really, because, you know, Feely's been looking pretty good, short notice type of situation for Kattar. His cardio held up. He looked great in that fight. He's one of these guys that's been around the sport for a while as well. He's only 29 years old, but he's been, you know, like I said, he's been a lot, and a lot of quality fights, even outside of the UFC, a lot of decent competition along the way. So Kattar, you know, there's a lot of good things going for him. He's a well-rounded fighter as well, but where his game is at the best is definitely on the feet. And when he starts to be aggressive and pushes that pace a little bit and comes forward, his punching ability is very good. I mean, he's accurate with the striking as well. And there's a lot of good things to like. So he's another guy that I think listens to his coaching staff relatively well, and you know, he defends himself well. I like his defense. Out of the two here, I definitely think that Kattar's defense is the better of the two, but it might not matter too much here. I think Burgos is the type of fighter that picks a spot, and he's going to land, even though Kattar has solid defense, I think, on the feet. I think Burgos is going to be able to get through at times, and when Burgos gets through, he marks you up, he's going to do some damage and possibly even finish you. So I don't necessarily agree with the early action coming in Kattar's way, especially with the huge drop in action. And I do agree with the later action coming in a little bit more towards Burgos now for sure. I do think that he's going to win this fight. I think if Kattar can survive, because he's never been knocked out, he possibly can. I mean, again, Burgos has that kind of special knockout power that, I mean, all it takes is one from him to get you out of there. But I think Kattar is game enough to survive, but I think Burgos just outpoints him. And as the fight goes on, I think it becomes a little bit more clear who the better of the two fighters are. And I think it's going to be Burgos. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Burgos maybe shoot a quick takedown or two along the way as well, because again, his wrestling is a little bit underrated, and that might put a, you know, the cap on a round or two for him as well. So a lot of good things to like about both of these guys. I think Kattar is going to win plenty of fights at 145 pounds, but I just like Burgos's chances here. I think stylistically it's a good fight for him, and he'll probably have a lot of success. So my pick is Burgos to get the job done here and win.
And I have to agree, Calvin Kattar is actually a solid fighter, and he looked great in that short-notice UFC debut beating Andre Feely. I mean, he was a guy that takes a little bit of time to settle into a fight, but once he does, I mean, he bases his game off of a very strong left jab, and I just was impressed by what I saw. I mean, he was aggressive. He had good power on the feet. He landed heavy strikes. So, I mean, Burgos cannot take this guy lightly. Burgos is the better fighter, though, in my opinion. Watching both of them compete, Burgos has elite counter-striking ability, but he can also lead. You know, watching him in his last bout against Godofredo Pepe, I mean, he dropped Pepe in the first minute of the fight, and then he dropped him again in the last minute of a 15-minute decision. So that just shows that this guy can go hard for three straight rounds and still pack a wallop. And Burgos is a very solid at mixing in combinations. So while even though Burgos prefers to counter-strike, I mean, when he counters, he doesn't just counter with that one kill shot. He counters with a good strike, and then he follows it with about three or four more strikes. So he's a guy that I am extremely excited about. I mean, Burgos mixes things up well as on top of it. While he's not quite as dynamic and crazy as somebody like Brandon Davis, Burgos mixes things up with his hands really well, his targets. I mean, he doesn't just headhunt. He throws to the head. He throws to the body. I mean, he just changes levels. He feints. I mean, he's tough to get a read on. And I can see Calvin Kattar having a lot of problems trying to find good moments to counter-strike because Burgos is such a seasoned striker. I mean, this is a guy that I think deserves to be in the top 15, and I expect him to be in the top 15 after people get to watch him on this main card for UFC 220. So while Calvin Kattar is a fighter that I like, I love watching Shane Burgos fight, and I think that this is a good matchup for him. And Burgos, his activity, his dynamic ability to strike, and having some pretty above average defense despite at times dropping his hands to kind of goad his opponent into exchanging is something worth getting excited about. So Shane Burgos is going to be my pick. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a UFC light heavyweight title fight between champion Daniel Cormier, who is 19-1 with one no contest, and challenger Volkan Ozdemir, who is 15-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Happened Cormier minus 380, the comeback on Ozdemir at plus 260. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Cormier minus 330, the comeback on Ozdemir is 270, plus 270. So line margins have tightened up despite the drop in favorite price. Still a better comeback on the dog here as well. So there is two-way action on this fight. And I figured it would be. It's hard, again, I mean, setting lines for these legendary type of fighters. And I'm considering Cormier a legendary type of fighter because, man, outside of John Jones, I mean, the guy has been just amazing in his UFC career between, you know, his Strikeforce days at heavyweight, all that stuff. I mean, he's had a heck of a run in his 20 career fights thus far. And, I mean, he's going to go down as definitely one of the best light heavyweights, even maybe even one of the better heavyweights, you know, of all time. I mean, that's how skilled this guy is. His wrestling, of course. I mean, just his awareness, his game planning, everything about Cormier, man, it's hard not to like him. And he's even improved his stand-up game as well. So there's all sorts of good stuff about him. But, hey, I'll tell you what, Ozdemir, man, he's been a cash machine for me. I'll tell you what, I had him against OSP, Sirkunov, and Manoa. So he's cashed as a dog in every one of those fights. And he's just underrated. A lot of people think that, you know, hey, he's that guy that lost to – you know, that guy in Bellator that, you know, got him down and was able to submit him. What a can Ozdemir is. Well, you know what? That fight was back, I believe, over 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago or whatnot. In 2014, Ozdemir has put the time and he's gotten better. I'm not saying he's going to be able to stifle Cormier's wrestling because not many people can. So make no mistake about that. And again, I said I cashed some tickets on him before. Well, this is a whole nother level he's dealing with here in Cormier. And I know that, but I mean, it's a definitely still a dog or pass situation in this matchup as well, because I think obviously Ozdemir knows the game plan here for DC. DC striking is not bad, but he's not going to want to stand and bang with Ozdemir. Ozdemir will put DC out. I know he's got a good chin. He was able to absorb that punishment from Anthony Johnson. I still don't know how, honestly. I mean, that's what kind of granite chin he is. And, of course, you know, that John Jones fight that he had last, I mean, Jones was able to finish him, but that was crazy. I mean, that, you know, beautiful kick that Jones landed, it just, you know, it happens from time to time. So here, Ozdemir does have special knockout power, that type of knockout power that is severely underrated. I mean, look at his fight with Sirkunov. It didn't look like much. And, man, the guy just, you know, put him down as well. He just puts people down. That's what he does. So if he stands up If Cormier stands with Ozdemir, Cormier, I think, will get knocked out. He's 38 years old. This is the thing with Cormier. I'm not saying he's on a big decline, but he's not getting any younger. And now he has absorbed some decent punishment, you know, through his career in the UFC as well. So his chin is not going to get any better. He's not getting it, like I said, any younger. He's facing another guy that can, you know, knock you out in Ozdemir. He's a dangerous competitor. So Cormier is going to need to get this fight to the ground. He's going to need to grind him out. He's going to try to look for, you know, probably a submission along the way as well. You watch that Bellator fight. They know what's a game plan for here. So it's hard not to pick Cormier. And I am going to pick him to win this fight. I think, you know, again, his wrestling probably is going to be too much for Ozdemir. So cashing as a dog for Ozdemir for me probably ends right here. But it still is a dog or pass situation, I do think. I would not lay the chalk in this spot on DC, even if he goes out there and I think he's capable of out wrestling and doing what he does best here. So the pick is DC. Still a dangerous fight. And I always love a good dog. So, you know, even if we're not putting a bet out there on Ozdemir, I still wouldn't mind seeing, you know, with his background, with the story and how fast he kind of climbed that ladder at light heavyweight with nobody giving him any respect. I wouldn't mind seeing Ozdemir become the new light heavyweight champion. That'd be kind of a Cinderella type of story to come true here. And, you know, everybody likes that. You can't argue that. Of course, the people that lay the chalk on DC probably won't like that, but that's a different, you know, another time for that. But I guess so. This should be a pretty interesting fight. I mean, styles make fights. So it's wrestler versus striker, a throwback type of situation. And the wrestler probably comes ahead. So the pick is DC. But I just hope it's a good fight. I hope it's not a quick finish unless we see a highlight type of real knockout, but we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Personally, I don't think this fight will be that good. I mean, Volkan Ozdemir has been just tearing through the opposition. I mean, he beat the last two top contenders in a minute combined to earn this title shot after going 3-0 in the UFC last year. But Daniel Cormier has the ability to completely neutralize Ozdemir as well. So with his, you know, Olympic world-class wrestling, we've seen Cormier go to his wrestling. He did it against Anthony Johnson twice. He did it against Dan Henderson. Like, when he faces heavy hitters, guys with an H bomb like Henderson, with just guys with devastating knockout power like Anthony Johnson, he closes the distance, takes them down, and beats them up, and eventually usually gets a submission finish. And yeah, I know that it was a long time ago, but holy moly, was it a awful performance for Ozdemir when he faced Kelly Anderson in Bellator for Bellator 115. Now, I know it was almost 4 years ago at this point, but I mean, it was a neck crank that he got submitted by. And I mean, Kelly Anderson has turned into just pretty much a nobody, ended up getting, submitted by Liam McGeary, and then he's never fought again. And that was 3.5 years ago. So I don't know. I mean, if it stays standing, Ozdemir could finish this fight quickly on the feet. If it goes to the ground, then I think Ozdemir's in huge, huge trouble. We haven't seen Ozdemir on the ground in the UFC. He faced Ovin St. Preux, and they stood and traded for three straight rounds, and he won a decision. And then he knocked out Surkunov and Manua extremely quickly. So I just don't know what's going to happen when this goes to the ground, other than I expect Cormier to get top position and to wail on him a little bit until he can, you know, make an opening and get a submission victory. So, and if it stays standing, Cormier is a solid striker with, you know, some heavy hands, but Ozdemir is the way better reach, way better technical striker, and he has good power and a better chin. So I think Ozdemir would knock him out in the feet. So I've explained how this fight's going to break down plenty long enough already. So I'm going to side with Daniel Cormier. The fact that Ozdemir got submitted by a neck crank is just too much for me. And I think that at some point, Cormier gets this to the floor, probably quicker than you expect, and he keeps it there. So my pick is going to be Daniel Cormier. Now moving on to the main event of the evening. The UFC heavyweight title is on the line between champion Stipe Miocic, who is 17-2, and challenger Francis Ngannou, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, Where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Ngannou, minus 160, the comeback on Stipe at plus 130. And right now, looking over the line at five dimes, it is Ngannou, minus 185, the comeback on Stipe is at plus 160. So a little bit more action coming in Ngannou's way. There is two action in this fight. I mean, there's some dog action coming back in on Stipe as well. And it should be. I mean, the guy's a champion. A lot of people were surprised that, you know, I still see it every day, you know, on social media or whatever. Like, how's Stipe the dog? He's a champion. I mean, it's happened, you know, several times before in the UFC as well. And I knew there's no way. I mean, with what Ngannou has accomplished lately and the hype around him and, you know, with the respect he's getting from everybody, there's no way I could open him a dog in this spot. The guy has special knockout power. I mean, talk about a story, you know, I mean, he's got, you know, I mean, from poverty to where he's at right now, it's another Cinderella type of story. It's amazing what he's accomplished. And I've seen this guy coming. I knew he was going to get an eventual title shot after his second fight. I mean, you just saw the potential and the talent in this guy. So he's a beast, man. I mean, the guy is definitely a special type of fighter, a special heavyweight, very athletic, only getting better fight by fight for sure. His knockout power is something. He's shown capabilities of submitting people as well. We all know that. His takedown defense is getting better. I think he's capable of bouncing back up, even if he's taken down. It's hard to hold him down. I mean, you know, even that Blades fight, you know, I know Blades had a little bit of success wrestling against Ngannou, but he's gotten better. You know, obviously he's been drilling that ever since, and he was able to, you know, get back up on his, you know, to his feet in that fight as well. Cause I think a lot of people are going to make the case that Stipe is going to wrestle here, and he might. And, you know, he might have some success doing so. I don't know how long he's going to be able to keep, Ngannou down though. And if he can continue, you know, that pace or whatever for a long time. So I think it does stay up on the feet. I think this is a striker versus striker matchup. I think Stipe is getting disrespected overall. I mean, the guy is a champion for a reason. He's got, I mean, talk about heart. The guy has it. He's got toughness. You know, that fight that he had against Overeem, where a lot of people, I think, saw him get blasted and obviously early on in that fight get hurt and then almost finished by Overeem. I mean, let's not forget that was all sorts of pressure in that situation in that fight. I mean, that was a fight that was in his hometown crowd. There was a lot going on for Stipe. I mean, a lot of pressure in that fight. You're facing one of, you know, the toughest fights of your career, one of the most dangerous opponents of your career as well. So I'm not surprised that he walked in, you know, and got caught early on in that fight and got dropped or whatever for Overeem. I think he had to kind of settle into that fight with all the pressure and all the circumstances going around him a little bit too. So defensively, not surprised he had a little bit let down there. But what he showed in that fight was that toughness, was the ability to not quit, get up and then, you know, battle through adversity. Then Overeem was, I mean, basically legitimately running from him after, you know, he got out of that guillotine or not too. And he was able to drop some bombs on him and finish him. So Stipe is that kind of fighter. I mean, he really, what he says about the belt and keeping it and wanting to defend it successfully and the belt ain't going in. I mean, he believes in himself. He's confident and he's that type of champion that he's been there with, you know, Mark Hunt, with Junior Dos Santos, of course. We all know that. With Arlovski, he's been in with heavy hitters. So even though Ngannou has, I think, even more knockout power than a lot of these guys have, Stipe's not going to be intimidated. And in fact, he's going to have a chip on his shoulder and come in here and try to prove everybody wrong like he always does. So I'm going to pick Stipe. I'm going to pick the champion. I think a lot of people are underestimating him in this spot. I think it is, I mean, a fight that either one of these guys could catch each other, knock each other out. Obviously, I mean, by knockout, you do have to favor Ngannou a little bit here, but I think Stipe is going to be smart. I mean, he has a very underrated training camp. I say that all the time. I mean, his coaches are really good. The game plan well. And, you know, I mean, that's part of why Stipe is so good as well. I mean, he listens to his coaching staff and, you know, he is able to implement that game plan successfully. So Stipe knows what he's up against here, and Ngannou's going to be a beast. He's going to be dangerous, but I think Stipe ends up knocking Ngannou out along the way. So my pick is Stipe to defend his title, break the UFC heavyweight record, and probably goes down, at least right now, as the best heavyweight of all time. I mean, with the title defense record, and I mean, you could argue that, of course, with the, you know, legendary heavyweight division throughout, you know, the UFC years, but I mean, the facts are the stats don't lie, and Stipe is going to probably do so if he wins this fight and be on top of the mountain. So good for him. He deserves it. But again, I'm looking forward. I hope this is a firefight though. I hope this plays out and it lasts a few rounds and we just see an all out war. Cause that's what all of us want to see. Let's face it. I mean, we want to see this be what we're all expecting it to be, and two of the best heavyweights in the world going at it. And I think it will end up being that way because both these guys have the will to win. They're not going to want to quit. They're going to want that strap and everything that goes along with it. So what a fight. I mean, this is seriously the best heavyweight fight that we're getting in a long, long time. I mean, I'm the most anticipated fight, at least in my opinion, in a long time. So I'm going to pick Stipe to win, and hopefully the champ defends his belt and gets a knockout.
I'm a huge fan of Stipe Miocic, but I'm also a realist, and I think that the next big thing is Francis Ngannou. I mean, I thought that he was going to be a future champion since I watched him, I think, get his second UFC win. So ever since then, I mean, he's done nothing but impress with just devastating knockouts. I mean, nothing crazier than the knockout of Overeem where, I mean, he literally lifted him in the air with that uppercut. I mean, Francis Ngannou hits harder than anyone I've ever seen. Like, he doesn't even have to punch hard and people go down, but he punches hard anyway. And I mean, this guy, he swings hard. He's fast. He's an incredible athlete. This is a guy that isn't just capable of winning the championship on Saturday. He's a guy that could hold the belt for a long time. And what's crazy is Stipe Miocic is an elite heavyweight. I mean, he is on a tremendous run of impressive, impressive first round knockouts that earned him the title and has helped him defend the title. So, I mean, it's crazy to me to think that it almost feels like he doesn't have a chance just because I think his chin is a little bit vulnerable. I mean, we've seen him get hurt against Overeem. We've seen him get knocked out against Struve. And when Francis Ngannou hits him, if he hits him just with one good clean strike, I think Stipe will be in big trouble. I mean, especially when you watch Stipe fight, he has great ability to adapt to his opponent with his offense. But I mean, a lot of times he doesn't move his chin at all and he just attacks in a straight line and he is open to counters. The problem is he really hasn't faced a lot of elite counter guys that are able to land that while avoiding Stipe's offense. I mean, he kind of overwhelms with his offense. But I mean, if you watch, I mean, he is just diving chin first sometimes. And I think that if he dives chin first at Ngannou, I mean, he's going to be get sent packing in a hurry. The best path to victory for Stipe is to kind of take away Ngannou's weapon. I mean, you don't want to get hit by a big punch from Ngannou. Close the distance, get in the clinch. I mean, you remember the first time Stipe fought Junior Dos Santos. I mean, maybe he was a little intimidated and Dos Santos was a little bit better at that point in his career, a little less shop-worn. But Stipe spent a lot of that fight along the fence, in the clinch, you know, kind of hugging at Dos Santos's legs, looking for takedowns, just trying to mix things up and make Dos Santos be concerned about the takedown so that he wasn't as willing to trade on the feet. And then that allowed Stipe to have some success on the feet. And by the second time they fought, Stipe was just so confident. I mean, he just stalked Dos Santos down and put him out. So, I mean, Stipe is a different fighter from that point, but I mean, that is a game plan to think about because if he can close the distance, even if he doesn't have a lot of success with takedowns, because I think Ngannou is a guy that is going to be very difficult to take down and keep down just because he's such a incredibly strong and powerful and athletic guy. But if you can just make him think about it, then that could leave some openings. And we don't really know what Ngannou's chin is like. We haven't really seen him get hit that hard by anybody. So Stipe has good power. If he can connect and Ngannou feels it, then, you know, we have a fight on our hands. But if he doesn't and Ngannou hits him first, I mean, this, I think it could be over quick. So I'm rooting for Stipe, but I believe Ngannou is probably going to pull this one out. I just think at some point, Stipe is going to walk into something just absolutely nasty, and I don't think he'll be able to recover from it. So my pick is going to be Francis Ngannou. I think he's going to become the new UFC heavyweight champion. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 220. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.